Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
My name is Catherine Janeway.
Prune juice, chilled.
Welcome, everybody, to The Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order with a bit of a twist. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
I feel like it's been a long road to get here.
Yeah, like no joke.
Seriously, like it seems like it took forever to get here.
You know what's funny is this is the end of the season, but... It's 11 of 13 of the Temporal War arc, and it's 25 of 28 of the Zindi Crisis.
What's the other?
I'm pretty sure they're including at least the season opener of next season, which would make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, and well, maybe there's something else after
there's
that.
There's the one where they come home after that.
Yeah. Which, yeah. So that would make sense. The Temporal Cold War, Daniels will show up twice more, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but my phone just told me, hey, you're going to have to get up early tomorrow. No, I don't, bitch, Memorial Day. So do we have any, we have stuff to talk about, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, first we want to talk about Strange New Worlds.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to bring it up 15 times while we're doing this episode.
No, so
you might as well get it out of the way.
And by the way, get your drinks together, because every time I mention it, you're going to be...
That's right.
He's taking a shot. I like this episode. What do they call it? Memento Mori. Yeah, Memento Mori. Because it was a fucking submarine episode.
It was great, dude. It was really good. Why did I feel like it was the Hunt for Red October, bro? Like, I was just...
I mean, when
sonar started hitting, and it was funny how it just fit, because that's technically what they're doing. They're in submarines.
Well, what I thought was interesting was the fact that Pike started talking like Sean Connery, and you know, where he's
spot on.
Yeah, you know, I was like going one, got aroused on that. We also got, because we. People were complaining about, well, technically, you know, nobody ever fought the Gorn before Kirk did.
I said, now they have.
Well, no, the thing was that nobody's ever seen a Gorn before.
And they still haven't.
Yeah. So
I don't think we ever will, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because they said that in Enterprise, or not Enterprise, in TOS.
Yeah.
That no one's seen a Gorn before. But they were still fucking terrifying.
I liked that we got... a little more of Scene's backstory and that PTSD that she had from, you know, dealing with that.
Do you know what I realized the other day? The actress that plays her is the same one that was in the Doctor Who episode that gave Pond her name.
Yeah, River Song her name. Yeah.
Song.
Oh, I saw her without her hair down like that. She's pretty hot. And she's totally bubbly too. Like I was like, yeah, of course you are. That's of course how you're going to be, you know? I like the helmsman where she was like, what kind of black hole is it? And then he's like, one problem at a time.
Yeah, she was ready, bro. But it was foreshadowing anyway, because they ended up doing it. But yeah. I just thought that was funny. Like, well, what kind? It's like, no. Let's workshop this first problem first.
What kind?
I like her, the helmsman chase. She's really cool.
Well, there was a lot of people on social media that's saying that they were military, that they've dealt with pilots and stuff like that. They go, they're just as cocky as she is.
Yeah.
They go, she's just spot on.
She can do anything, basically.
What was it? She's like, oh, now you're making this sound fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I really, it's funny because I pretty much like all the characters. There isn't one character that like for example, I love Discovery, but Stamets annoys me most of the time.
Because he's like you.
He ain't like me. I don't fucking cry all the time. But I still like the character. He's just annoying.
Yeah.
You know, no one is annoying so far in Strange New Worlds. Everyone's pretty cool. And I thought Sing was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because she kind of, but then they wrap that up pretty fucking quick. Put that fucking pin on and respect the people who have come before you.
I was reading that some people didn't like they go, why did it end so abruptly? Like, I don't understand. And I was like, it ended because her character gave hope at the end. I go, it was what she was saying that was the thing, not the image.
And also too, and this is a bit of a stretch, but let's keep it real. She's in Starfleet. Which means she was on the fence with the no hope thing anyway.
Right.
You can't be in Starfleet and be completely devoid of hope.
Right.
So that was just the extra push she needed. I really like that episode. Real good. I've noticed with this show and the few episodes we've gotten, the character development is very strong.
I like,
and that's something that I like.
Hemmer did a good. They did a good job, kind of humanizing Hemmer, the engineer.
Yeah.
With Uhura. And I like the explanation of him being a pacifist.
Yeah, they dug into his culture and how he could be a pacifist but also work with Starfleet. And it made sense.
Yeah, because you know, he's good. The people confuse pacifism with passive. And he's like, no, I will defend Starfleet and its beliefs. But he will not, you know, he's not going to just go and do it just to do it.
Which, and him being an engineer fits too, because he's not shooting anybody.
Right.
He's just making sure all the machines work.
I wanted to be a botanist.
Yeah, that's cool. I really like botany.
Who was it? Pike. His reaction to every time he lost a crew member, or he thought he lost a crew member, the reaction that he thought when he thought he lost Hemmer and Uhura, just that look. And then when they said, we're here, and just that release was just like, you felt it.
My favorite though in the entire episode, I forget exactly what they were doing, but he said do it, and it was highly risky, and it worked, and he goes, whoo, shit. Like, you could tell he's like, he did not know if that was gonna work. But yeah, like I said, I've been thoroughly impressed with this show. I think they did one of the major things, you know, and Discovery is a great show, but it had some learning points. I mean, it was bringing Star Trek back into the fold. TV, of course, there's going to be some bumps in the road. I think one of the biggest missteps of Discovery in the beginning was with character development. We were only developing one person, really. They fixed that. They're obviously developing other people. But I think they've kind of at least recognized that with this show, because this show is not playing like that. Like, they're giving everybody a fair shake. Everybody's – you know, developing. Even the fucking dude in the transporter room, I know more about him than most of the people on the bridge in Discovery.
Oh, that was one thing that I was telling you, is like, this showed how badass the crew of the Enterprise is. We see Kyle and that blue shirt guy nod in the beginning, and then he's running to get into the bulkhead, and he's slowing Kyle down, and then he says go, and he pushes Kyle through the bulkhead doors. So
and this is what we discussed too, that Discovery in the early days was kind of heavy-handed with the everyone falling apart thing. Tilly comes to mind, who became a wonderful character.
Right.
But in the beginning, you're like, these are supposed to be the best of the best.
Yeah.
That's why they're on this ship. Enterprise being, of course, the flagship of the fleet, but Discovery was this top secret scientific vessel. They wouldn't put schmucks on there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's what was kind of bothering me in the beginning, but they quickly fixed it. I think they course changed with that.
Yeah, that's what I thought they did when they brought in Pike for season two, was to kind of make it a
Because Pike
Starfleet.
Was that very... almost Kirk-esque.
Yeah.
You know, he whatever room Pike is in, he is in charge of it.
I always found that Pike is very much Kirk and Picard in both ways, in a lot of ways.
You know what he reminds me of? Admiral Kirk. An older Kirk, more experienced. That's the kind of temperament, because he still reminds me of Kirk. But when Kirk was a captain, he was very like, I'll knock you the fuck out,
right.
You know, but I don't think Pike is that rough around the edges.
No, that's what
he's supposed to be older than Kirk.
I think so. What I like too is the, when Spock tells him about if he goes deeper into the vortex, you know, it's going to compress pressure. He's like, you're right. Let's do that. That's not what I said. And so yeah. I was like, oh no.
The banter's spot on. I mean, it's just great, dude. Like everything, I so far since that show's been out, every Thursday I go, oh, cool, it's Thursday. Like, I'm like so excited to watch that show. And now with Obi-Wan as well, not to cross the streams, you know, but we got so much going on.
And
right
then
now.
The Orville, and the Orville next week.
We got Orville next week. And then on the Fantasy Arm, we're hoping for the best for the Lord of the Rings show coming out. Got some spinoffs for Game of Thrones. Like, it's to be a fantasy sci-fi fan right now is great. You know, there's so much. And in the book space, which I won't get into, there's a lot of stuff going on in there that's great. It's just a great time to be alive, guys. You
know? all right. So with that being said, we have reached the season finale of season 3.
And I will spoil this. It ends in a cliffhanger, my friends, as it should. Okay?
UPN Wednesday, the Star Trek Enterprise season finale.
Your world is no longer the only one in jeopardy.
The future of every Star Trek captain, every crew, every ship you've ever known depends on this moment.
You can't ignore your place in history.
My mission is to save Earth.
If you're killed, none of this will happen.
The survival of one human.
We're not dead yet.
The Star Trek Enterprise season finale.
Moving right into it. This is a long one, by the way, so get comfortable. 0 hour, okay? Episode 24 of season 3. First aired on May 26th, 2004. With the weapon on – oh, this one's also written by the dynamic duo themselves, Rick Berman and Brandon Braga.
Who Brandon Braga said himself, it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right. Actually, I've been meaning to watch – I haven't seen any of the episodes yet of that fucking
– Shuttlepod?
Shuttlepod 1, and I'm fucking up.
Yeah, they just had – they just brought on Brandon Braga this week.
Yeah, I need to catch up.
They've had Rick Berman on there already.
They had Rick Berman, and then I haven't seen any. I think I saw the first one. I saw the table read one.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, there's some good ones. You should be checking. You should check it out.
I'm being an idiot. Too busy watching stupid shit on YouTube all day.
You're being a dick is really what you're doing.
I'm being a piece of shit.
You're being a fuck up. I mean, that's just, you know, you're just the worst of the worst in this society.
Adam, you're an embarrassment. Okay, to your family, to your friends, to the world. All right, it's like, Jesus,
to all of humanity. You're being.
Why don't you go take a long walk off a short pier somewhere? All right.
Well, you should. It's like a podcast. You can just turn on YouTube and watch. And
I know. I just keep forgetting about it. Like, I don't know why. And then as soon as I get reminded, I'm like, oh my God, I want to listen to that. And then I forget about it again. There's just too much shit. Like, I need to make a list of things I want to watch.
And then throw that list away.
And throw that list away. Oh God. It's fun being me, you know? With the weapon on its way to Earth, Archer leads a small team to intercept it before it can strike. T'Pol leads Enterprise on a mission to destroy one of the spheres in the Expanse. You know what's funny is I thought them splitting up was dumb, but it was so good.
Yeah.
Because both storylines were fucking awesome. Awesome. I don't know why we're doing the Batman theme, but that's okay. The Zindi weapon is...
You missed that part where T'Pol turned into a bat? All of a sudden she was like, Trip, get it done.
I'm Batman. I'm T'Pol.
I'm Vengeance.
Yeah. The Zindi weapon is inside a vortex with a Zindi reptilian starship. I love season finales because when you read this, you think of someone who's never seen an episode of Star Trek and then think about it, like what you're hearing. They're like, what? aboard the vessel, Commander Dahlem stands with two other Zindi reptilian officers, one of whom joins Dahlem in imagining how the Zindi would have benefited if the Guardians had made the reptilians the dominant Zindi species before their civil wars. Dahlem remarks that thanks to the fact that the Guardians have finally come to their senses, the reptilians will take their place at the head of a new Zindi empire once Earth is destroyed. They toast to their success by devouring live mice whole, which is on brand, but gross. Because they did look alive. So I'm very curious to see how that they did that. I'm hoping it's in the notes.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like...
Yeah, I was like, bro, you're really, really trying to drive home these are the bad guys, you know?
Look, I'm trying to masturbate, and you're making it a little difficult. Yeah, Jesus.
There's no other way to watch Star Trek than with your dick in your hand, okay?
Yeah, I mean it.
Or if you're a lady, something else in your hand, okay? Act 1. Aboard Degra's ship, the Zindi primate counselor informs Captain Archer that the weapon is almost 3 hours ahead of them, but notes that they are close to the gap. Malcolm Reed states that their vessel may be faster but is not well armed and asks how many ships are escorting the weapon, something they do not know, which is why he's asking.
which is usually followed by why.
that was a weird way to state a question. Like the person who wrote this, like they asked a question because they didn't know. Oh, really?
Is that how that works?
I only ask questions when I know the answer already.
I only ask questions sarcastically.
Exactly. See, I'm an asshole. Right? Archer concludes that the only way to destroy the weapon is from the inside, but all of Degra's schematics are encrypted, making it impossible to destroy the weapon. Archer decides.
Wait, don't we have a 7-zip up?
No one paid for the licenses.
Ah, that's what happened.
Yeah. Archer decides.
You used the free trial? Fucking A.
I still love those jokes. Has anyone ever paid for WinRAR?
I never did.
Who did? I don't even use it. I haven't used that shit in like a decade. Archer decides that they need Hoshi Sato to help them, and despite Reed's initial objections that she is too weak, he eventually agrees. In the Guardians' realm, we're in fantasy now.
Every time they say Guardians, I always expected to see Quill pop up or Rocket or something.
In the Guardians' realm.
I am Groot.
They're just in the Q land, I think. It's all white in the background. They discuss the fact that their favorable timelines continue to diminish, even though the weapon has almost reached Earth. They note that Enterprise is on a course for a primary sphere and decides to increase the transformation of space around it. So they're accelerating their timeline. Okay. In engineering aboard the Enterprise, Trip Tucker, it also bothered me, if you could have accelerated your timeline this whole time, what's with the slow burn? I'm confused. Especially if everyone in that space was going to die anyway. Why are you playing politics?
It was basically like, well, we were trying not to do it this way, but...
Yeah, stupid. Probably in their timeline, they did do it quickly, and then Earth was like, nah, bruh. In engineering,
but it would have been a nice throwaway line, you know, to kind of make it like, oh, okay, I get it. You tried it before and it didn't work out so well.
Right. In engineering aboard the Enterprise, Trip Tucker reports to T'Pol that the main power grid has been realigned to increase the deflector pulse, but it will fry almost every system on board.
As it always does.
These starships are literally just thumbed together with fucking hopes and dreams. Things are always blowing.
They need to really, really reinforce the EPS conduits.
They really do. They're unshielded and just they're a risk. Really, yeah. I don't understand. I think they're just on the hull, like exposed. I think EPS conduits also just a fancy way of saying fuse.
Ain't gonna blow all the fuses.
Yeah. T'Pol orders him to prepare to initiate the pulse.
He goes over to fix the EPS conduits, opens it up, and it's like the little the fuse box on the bottom of your car.
Yeah, and the panel's missing because you already know, dude. All right. Like, it's fallen off. You know? Come on, my car doesn't have that. I don't know where it is.
It's got foil over because the door of the panel is already gone, so it's just like yeah. Somebody put like a cellophane or something to just cover it, you know.
T'Pol gives the order again, but Tucker states that the captain told the Zindi they would try to destroy the spheres and did not say anything about destroying the ship in the process. T'Pol asks Tucker if he realizes what will happen if Earth is destroyed, and states that without humanity, no one will combat the sphere builders, and the Delphic Expanse will continue to grow and will encompass many systems, including Vulcan.
Yeah,
she states that Earth is no longer the only world in jeopardy. I just wanted to finish my sentence. Go ahead.
But the thing is that, you know, Vulcans didn't want humans in space anyway, so...
Well, my trip is no one can do... Isn't Vulcans more powerful than Earth at this point? No, why can't Vulcan do anything about it?
Because it's written by humans. That's why.
That's right. We are the savior of everything.
Exactly.
As always. America. I mean, humans. On the bridge, Travis Mayweather discussed, I forget what episode it is. There's an episode where, and I honestly felt honored, you know, but it was that dude, the ambassador, Saval.
Oh, yes. Well.
And he says the thing he starts dissing humans, saying right. We're not like exceptionally strong or whatever. He says, but what we have is this like this just innate desire to improve ourselves or something like that. And I was like, oh, man, thanks, Saval. Damn. You know? It's just so nice of him, you know.
It doesn't always work, but they still have that drive.
We try. T'Pol asks Tucker if you're on the bridge. Travis Mayweather, who got a lot of play in these last two episodes. Good for him.
Yeah, and we won't see him much in season four.
I know. I mean, he's still collecting checks. Yeah, I'm not gonna hate on him too much, but discovers a problem with the sphere's cloaking barrier. Nothing should be on the sensors, yet they can see the spatial anomalies clustered much tighter than ever before. In sick bay, jumping around a lot. It's the episode of Game of Thrones at this point. Phlox tells T'Pol that the space around the sphere is being transformed, not unlike the disturbance where the ship found the transdimensional being. This episode is very like there's a lot happening and it's happening quickly.
And there's a lot of Mary Sue moments in this movie. A
lot of Mary Sue moments, but it's fun. This episode's so fun. This episode's very what's the word? Like pulpy? Like it's like an action movie.
Yeah.
Like things are just happening and you're like, yeah. Like this is one of the few episodes lately that I've been like, yeah, motherfucker. Because people are just being G's and shit. Like, what the fuck? Enough of this pussyfooting around.
You've been a douche the whole season. Now you're coming out being G-moments.
Archer was a fucking bomb ass dude in this episode. Like he took care of it. It was fucking cool. Anyway.
Surprise, motherfucker.
T'Pol notes that if they are to disable the spheres, they will need to get within 1 kilometer. I'm going to need that in freedom units, T'Pol, because I don't know, of the surface of Sphere 41. But Phlox points out that if they enter the disturbance, the crew will be dead within minutes. It's always dead within minutes.
Right.
With Phlox. Like, Phlox, calm down. He says that he can synthesize a neuroleptic compound. Of course he can, which could keep the crew conscious for about 12 minutes, but suggests that they find a way to shorten the plan to destroy the spheres. Aboard Degra's ship, Archer asks Hoshi if she's had any luck decrypting the schematics. She responds that she isn't feeling very well. She also goes to lay down. Like, she's out of it, bro.
Yeah.
She asked for Phlox to come.
The way Archer was acting is kind of like, you dumb being a bitch?
Yeah, for you real. Dumb like, being a bitch. We don't have time for this. Yeah. But you know what's funny? And let me read this paragraph and I'll say something. She asked for Phlox to come and see her, but the captain reminds her that Phlox isn't there and tells her that she has a job to do. Hoshi becomes emotional and starts to blame herself for giving the reptilians the third launch code for the weapon. When Archer says that she had no choice, she blurts out that she could have fought harder to jump off the platform while she was in the weapon. Archer tells her that everything hinges on her decrypting the schematics for the weapon, and she returns to work. So I've actually seen people talking about this episode, and so many people like, Archer was such a piece of shit. He needs to be more sympathetic to what she went through. We don't have time for that. See, in the real world, sweetheart, sometimes like he is sympathetic. He shows that he's sympathetic. However, they got something much bigger going on than her, and they need to fucking push through it and get the job done. Well, and she agrees with him.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I can't remember where I heard this. It might have been Discovery, where they said that they had trouble getting somebody to react or to listen because they kind of were, their brain was freaking out. And then they said to call them for a duty.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's muscle memory.
Yeah.
For someone who's especially in the service, you know, like Starfleet's supposed to be, but like the military, that's what they'll do in the military. If people are freaking out and they don't have time to take them to medical or something, they just go, you have a mission. This is what you're – and they'll – a lot of people will just calm down. They're like, okay. And they focus on the task that they have to do. Now, there's still mental illness that needs to be solved.
Right.
But it's pushed to the side for a second because you don't have time to do that when you're being shot at. You know? And it's so funny when people who don't understand that simple shit are like, oh, my God. Fucking – he's such a piece of shit. Shut the fuck up. Obviously, you've never been through anything in your life.
But in that person's defense, Archer has kind of been that way the whole season. Like,
he was. He's
been dialed up to like 20.
He's been – in this episode and the last episode, he hasn't. But he has been the whole season. So it is easy to think he's just being a dick again.
Yeah.
But
But I get what you, I get. You
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like sometimes we don't have time to be upset. Like most of us have had moments, not moments where the earth is going to be destroyed, but just like, you know, simple I've stuff. Like someone dies and you have kids to watch, you know, just something like that. You know, you don't have time to be upset.
Right.
You have to do it later. Story of my life. where was I? Just talking about baby girl being sick. On board the weapon, Dalam is told that when they exit the vortex, they will need to be 2 million kilometers from Earth to allow the firing sequence to start. In engineering, Tucker, we're all over the place this episode. And when you watch it, it makes sense.
Right.
Tucker tells Mayweather that he has found a way to destroy the sphere without tearing the ship apart, but they will need to take power from the impulse engines and travel on thrusters when they reach the anomaly. Mayweather notes that it would be hard with the time limit, but Tucker encourages him. He's like, you're good. You're fine. You'll do it. He's like, fuck you, Trip. You'll take my shit.
If that was written now, it would have been like, you're going to have to take her in with thrusters. Bruh.
Yeah.
That's all it would have been.
You know what pisses me off about Mayweather the most is that technically he's always doing cool shit.
Yeah.
Because he's the pilot. But they never fucking put him anywhere to do anything like on screen. Reed tells Archer that they will not be able to transport directly onto the weapons control platform due to the deflector shielding. Despite Reed's objections, Archer decides to take Hoshi with him to the weapon because she has been on the weapon before. When asked what will happen if they cannot escape in time, Archer announces that he will give everyone plenty of time to get to the beam out point. Reed asks what Archer intends to do and receives the reply that Archer has no intention of dying on the weapon.
Every time I heard that, I always think of from Transformers, the movie where Springer goes, trust me, I have better things to do tonight than die.
Yeah. He said it in such an aloof way. Like, he's like, I'm not dying on that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
If anything, you're dying, but not me. I ain't dying.
Right. As he exits the room, Archer finds himself on a balcony overlooking a large hall. Daniels is there and tells him. I love every time Daniels shows up, Archer just looks annoyed. Like, I don't have time for you.
It's funny. Archer and I have the same expression whenever Daniels appears. Like, oh, it's God. Like, oh, God damn.
What the fuck do you want? Daniels is there and tells him that it is a very important day. Daniels points out a man in a blue jacket, saying that it is Archer a little more than 7 years in the future. He reveals that the elder Archer is about to make history and that he must not risk his life or the United Federation of Planets may never come to be. So basically Archer sees he doesn't really care at the moment, but he's watching himself.
The final episode of Enterprise.
Yeah, exactly. He's watching himself form the United Federation of Planets. Mm-hmm. But he's so – and I agree with him. He's got shit – he doesn't have time for this. Like, and Daniels' whole point was like, don't go on that away mission because you might die and it's too important. He's like, it's important to destroy this fucking weapon. And it's something that he told Daniels in earlier episodes where this is your future. This is my fucking present.
Right.
You know, I'm working within this. Unless you're going to help me, the fuck out of here. You know,
it was kind of like you know, that guy in the blue jacket, that's you in 7 years. Well, why is that guy in the blue jacket blowing that guy in the black jacket? Well, I can't divulge everything.
But that guy in the black jacket, that's me. What the fuck? You know one thing that bugs me too?
And then does a
– What bugs me too is this whole – didn't Daniel say that this didn't happen before?
Yeah.
So why aren't they getting involved? Isn't their job to correct errors in the timeline? They just lay it all on Archer. Like, he ain't got nothing else to do.
Yeah, like, he's like, well, you know, he's got time. He's got time.
And also, where's Jean-Claude Van Damme? They're time cops, right? Classic movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it. 90s fun, okay? Time cop.
Especially when Ron Silver implodes.
Yeah. Act 2. Enterprise drops out of warp as it arrives at Sphere 41. It should have been 42 just to be kind of a sly Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference. Just saying, you know. Mayweather states that the anomaly is growing and it is 100,000 kilometers larger than the first time they encountered it. Phlox informs the bridge crew that he has enhanced the neuroleptic compound as much – What?
Of course he has.
Of course he has, right. as much as he can, and that they should stay in the disturbance no longer than 15 minutes. Now you got 15. At first it was, what, 12?
Yeah.
Now it's 15.
Well, so because, you know, he was able to alter the chronometric particles.
That's right. That's right. Basically, they're going to take this drug, and they're going to keep going back in time a couple steps for 15 minutes. That's right. Why, you know, the compound is released. And the Enterprise makes its final approach towards Sphere 41. Back on Degra's ship, Archer tells Hoshi that they need to disable the reactor at a specific point during the inversion sequence, but he does not know the sequence, and if this is not done correctly, the internal safeguards will kick in, and it will be impossible to overload.
And it'll knock out every EPS conduit on the ship.
They're already out. You know? Hoshi tells him that she has the sequence, but decrypting it is another problem. I like this, that they had it like this, that it wasn't just jumping in there, kill some people, and press a button.
Right.
Like, I thought that was really cool, because that's kind of how machines work. Like, you're going to have to do it the correct way.
Yeah, but they saved that plot point for the other team.
Yeah, that's true. That one, but the funny thing is that plot point was more tense, because you were waiting. Like, yeah. I don't know. I thought this episode was great. One of the Zindi tells Archer that they have gotten close enough to isolate the weapon signature. Archer is informed that the insectoid ship is no longer with Dahlem's fleet and that the weapon is being escorted by a single craft, Dahlem's ship. And if you guys forget from last episode, Dahlem blew up the insectoid ship because he dared question him.
Exactly.
So someone has delusions of grandeur already. What a bitch. On that vessel, one of Dahlem's crew informs him that Degra's ship is less than 20 minutes behind them. Dahlem instructs the weapon crew to prepare to initiate the firing sequence as soon as they exit the vortex. It is then reported that there are no Earth vessels in the vicinity and only one orbital station nearby. That's another thing. Why didn't they send a message to Earth?
Because nobody in that fucking show sends messages to anyone. It's you have true. Intruder alerts and nobody contacts the bridge.
It's true, bro. It's like, and I know Earth's fleet wasn't banging back then, but I know some Vulcan ships was hanging out, bro.
You're right.
Come on, maybe a couple Tellarite ships too. And I know some Andorian motherfuckers was hanging out. We'll get to that in a minute. But to the reptilian's light, the station is unarmed. So this is a science station.
Yeah, it was supposed to be civilians.
Yeah. When Earth is shown on the view screen, Dalum comments that the aquatics would feel at home here due to the large amount of water present. I mean, they better like plastic unless they've cleaned all that up. Meanwhile, Enterprise has entered the disturbance and Phlox starts the countdown. Mayweather states that he has the sphere on sensors and that it is only 20,000 kilometers away. T'Pol instructs the crew to use thrusters as soon as they are in visual range. Tucker informs T'Pol that the deflector is standing by, and as he places his hand on the console, he notices that his skin is slowly starting to show the effects of being in the disturbance. By the way, makeup crew was on one that day, because that shit was looking real good.
Somebody fucking needed some moisturizer.
Yeah, for real. They literally look like fucking the desert, bro. Yeah. It was crazy.
Something's happened to my skin. Just don't touch it. Just don't scratch.
Yeah, he said, just don't scratch. Back by the weapon, Dalum's vessel exits the portal only 800,000 kilometers ahead on a direct course for Earth. Just as Archer instructs Reed's team to prepare to beam to the weapon, one of the Zindi at the bridge console notes that Dalum's ship is changing course for a space station. When it comes on screen, Archer identifies it as Yosemite 3, a research station having at least 30 to 40 civilians on board. Archer instructs the crew to hail them on the frequency provided, only to be told that they can't get anything through due to the weapons disruption wave. Oh, I guess that answers my question as to why they didn't alert Earth. Enterprise reaches the sphere, and T'Pol instructs them to drop to 2,000 meters. Tucker tells Phlox that something is happening to his skin, and Mayweather also admits to seeing the same on his own. Phlox responds and informs them that it was expected, that they shouldn't scratch it, and that there's only 11 minutes remaining. This scene was a lot funnier because it was super tense and they were all shouting.
But never their eyes not changing from taking their eyes
their
off
task,
of,
yeah.
their task. Yeah.
T'Pol gives Tucker the firing coordinates, and the deflector pulse is fired at the sphere. Phlox informs them that there is less than 10 minutes to go. In engineering, as the crew continues to check the systems, three sphere builders appear out of thin air and begin to attack with balls of charged particles launched from their palm. These motherfuckers was Hadouken around the ship and shit. And it's crazy, too, because this is actually...
And one of them looked like Raul Julia. That was the real weird part.
This is the first time the sphere builders ever physically have gotten involved.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, what the fuck? Act 3. The sphere builders begin to use their trans-dimensional abilities to disrupt Enterprise's power systems in hopes of shutting down the deflector pulse. By the way, them walking around emotionless on their face just made them look like cocky assholes.
Yeah. But that was the thing, is we see them doing this stuff, and bridge and engineering crew is seeing them, and no one goes engineering to bridge, intruder yeah. alert. You know,
it's foolish. I don't know what it is. And but it's mainly with Enterprise. Because yeah. all the other shows, they be calling motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Security alert, security alert.
Yeah, it's true that we got intruders in engineering or whatever. But nobody they don't talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, they have to run to the fucking panel to say anything.
But they did that in the TOS, too.
That's true, too. And they were constantly calling out security alerts.
I mean, the thing was is that they were probably on intergalactic TikTok and not paying attention to...
Motherfuckers was on a union break. He's like, hey, yo, some shit going down. Why didn't you say nothing? I was on my break.
I got 5 minutes left on my break, man. I ain't saying anything.
You out here tripping. I'm going to get my union rep in here. You keep fucking bothering me. Imagine. As Dolan prepares to intercept Degra's ship, calling them pathetic due to their weaker weapons, the Arboreal informs Archer that the intercepting vessel is arming their torpedoes, and that there is another vessel approaching at high warp asking for Archer. It is the Andorian Commander Shran. This dude came in with heat, dude. Real, dude. Shran tells them that their ship is no match for the reptilian vessel and that he anticipated that they would need assistance. So the funny thing is Shran acts hard this whole time. But you know he's here because he's a homie, bro.
Oh, yeah. He's like he knows what Archer's up against, and he's there to help Archer.
And I love Andorian ships, and we got to see so much of it. I don't know what it is. The Andorian ships look so utilitarian, and I just dig it.
What I dug was the fact that Shran's whole thing was like, you should be impressed. We tracked you through that vortex. You know,
he's
like,
still flexing, bro. Like, I love this dude.
This isn't the time.
He's such a fucking badass. You know, I want to see his ass in fucking imagine Strange they had New World. In Strange New World.
Oh my god, that'd be
so dope. on Enterprise, the deflector pulse is disappearing and the Mako weapons are not affecting the sphere builders as the pulses pass right through them. Tucker reports that the sphere builders have to be stopped or the process will take additional time, which they no longer have. Corporal Kelly orders his men to reset their weapons to a modulating frequency as per Phlox's instructions.
The fucking Borg.
Experience with the Borg. Exactly. Bro.
And he's over there like, going, oh, well, so he became this was a Phlox Mary Sue, because this is where, oh, well, when we had our transdimensional friend, I actually was able to run tests on him that I didn't even do or mention before.
Listen, whatever gets us there. You know what I mean?
Spit, dry handed, don't matter.
Yeah, this has an effect. And this has an effect and forces the sphere builders to retreat. It's a weird effect, though. Like, it's still going through them.
Right.
But they seem annoyed.
Yeah, it's like disrupting something.
Builders to retreat as they use their abilities to pass through the walls to find a new console where they continue to disrupt power systems. Shran's vessel, the Kumari, which is badass, proceeds to escort Degra's ship and takes weapons fire from the enemy vessel while they approach the weapon. Deciding to fight back to buy Archer time, Shran fires back and then declares that he and Archer are no longer even. Now Archer owes him.
Yo, I love it.
Shran is so cinematic too, dude. Like, it's so cool.
Tell Archer we're no longer even. He owes me.
And no one says nothing to him, dude.
It would have been funny to see one of Degra's men look back at the other two Zindi with the hand gesture of like stroking himself. Like,
you know what's funny? I want to take that scene and redub it with the fucking dun, 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 in the background.
No. Best way to do it is tell Archer we're no longer even. Tell him he owes me. Dun dun dun. Dun dun dun.
Dude, Shran has been fucking great. Archer and his boarding party then beam over to the weapon. Surprisingly, Archer doesn't even know Shran's there, by the way, because he's doing some other shit. Surprising the reptilians and killing them all. Bro, this shit was so funny. So the way they filmed it was so funny because you were following the reptilian and then all of a sudden the camera pans to what the reptilian suddenly sees. And it's literally just Archer and Hoshi standing there, bro. And it looked like he was like, sup.
It was funny because you came with sup and when he looked up, I came up with, hello there.
It's so funny because you can tell Archer waited a beat.
Yeah.
Until he saw him. Like, I want to scare this motherfucker. I'm a boogeyman, bro. What's up? Like, I was like, holy shit.
Papa, bitch.
who the fuck was I? Archer switches some power cells to begin the overload. Archer and his boarding party then beam over to weapons, prizing their returns, and killing them all. Yeah, they just fucking. Now we're on action movie star mode because they were handling it. Archer switches some power cells to begin the overload process. At this time, Dolan discovers that the boarding party has left the ship and that the Kumari is attempting to distract him. Aboard the weapon, more reptilians again. He sounded mad at himself.
Yeah, like he fell for it.
It's a distraction. Like, he's like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Fuck me, I fucking bought into it.
Yeah. Aboard the weapon, more reptilians engage the Makos, one forcing Hoshi to lose her data pad, which has all the decryption shit on it. Archer attacks the creature, and Reed forces the reptilian off the platform into the shafts. And fucking little moves from Reed, bro.
Bro, I think he skipped the one. Yeah, he did skip the one where the one Mako was firing from that bridge.
And
And then the reptilian came up, put his pistol.
That
to the guy
was
said,
"G," because so the
he throws his hands up like he's giving up, and then after a beat, he like. Surprise, motherfucker!
Yeah,
and then
grabs
just like
arm,
grabs the
dude.
Gun. He ends up getting stabbed and thrown off, But a G. He took that, and then Reed goes and takes
Reed
him
comes
out.
Swinging in with the kick and shit. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Dude, I was fucking yelling. I was like, yeah!
I literally heard Hadouken! You know?
I was like, these motherfuckers ain't no joke. On Enterprise, Phlox informs the crew that their time is up. DePaul orders an evacuation. Tucker intervenes by letting them know that he needs a minute to finish his task. Seconds later, when Phlox repeats that they have no time, he concurs and presses a button. The pulse intensifies and the sphere begins to collapse.
Would have been funny as if when he's like, 10 more seconds, he goes, you have no more time. He's like, you're right. Chill out. And then hits the button.
That's basically everyone was on an Arnold Schwarzenegger level in this episode too, and I was here for it. It was fucking great. The sphere builder, a pulse-like signal is emitted, and the next sphere in the network also starts collapsing. The sphere builders aboard Enterprise scream as they dematerialize back to their home realm, allowing. I think they just died. I don't think they went back to anything. Allowing the ship's power to return, the crew then discover that the entire sphere network has been destroyed. So this was a bit Mary Sue, but still cool.
Well,
they found the main one.
Right.
And then it blew all the circuits in the fucking chain. So it you could say it was dumb, but it wasn't because it made sense.
Yeah. But they the whole hope was if they destroyed this, it would cause a chain reaction.
And it did.
And it did.
They save the galaxy again. Human beings, what's up? Meanwhile, Shran discovers that a reptilian, Dalam, has transported to the weapon. Shran orders all weapons targeted on Dalam's ship's starboard engines, destroying the ship in the process as the shield in that area were knocked out in the battle, leaving that particular spot vulnerable.
Dude,
he's all just like, oops, motherfucker.
Yeah, Shran was like, Shran was all like, he's like, he's over there. He's like, but his ship is unguarded, so let's fuck it up.
Well, he said something like, let's make sure. Or
he doesn't have a ship to come back to.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything to come back to. He fucking trends the shit, dude. I love him. Every time he speaks.
Cacao, motherfucker.
On board the weapon, Archer. You know, I thought this was long, but it's so fun to read that it doesn't feel long.
Yeah.
Archer orders.
Just lots of words.
Yeah, you know, there's just lots of words in these paragraphs. This is weird. Archer orders Reed to hand him the charges and returns to Degra's ship. Reed argues, but Archer overrules him, which happens a lot in this episode. Like, nah, fuck off. Do what I say. assuring him that he will be right behind them. This was a cool scene, though, because they were like, no, because you really didn't think he was going to make it. Like, you're like, oh, shit. We know, because we know there's another season, but
right. We
didn't know then. Archer set the charges on the reactor and detonates them. He climbs back down the shaft to reset the final switch and starts an overload. At this time, he is attacked by Dalam. by the way, why does Dalam look like a fucking 1970s pimp in that damn outfit that he's wearing?
Surprise, motherfucker! Yeah, for real. It would have been funny if he comes swinging in on like on a rope as he goes, surprise, motherfucker!
I was waiting for Archer to say, I am the law, and then Dalam to go, law!
I am the law.
It's like, ugh. Losing the fight, Archer attacks a final charge to Dalam's back and sets it off, killing Dalam. By the way,
dude, that
these two sentences don't do it justice because that fight was dope, dude. And the look Archer gives him when he puts the beams like, bye, bitch. And he just kind of steps like behind that, a beam and
that's
shit.
The, I was like, bro. That's the look he was emoting when he did that. He's like, bah, bitch. No, like, it would have been better if he's like, bye, Felicia. He dips behind
so
the.
Good. It was so good. Archer runs across the platform as explosions go off. Around. You know what this
fucking
reminded
Michael
me of?
Michael Bay directed that.
You know what this
bit,
reminded
dude?
Me of? Demolition Man, bro.
Oh, when yeah.
He's all,
yeah.
And everything's all blowing up. Bro, I was losing my fucking mind. I was like, what the fuck?
All of a sudden, in the background, you hear, Phoenix!
He's going to get a meal at Taco Bell after this, bro. For real, for real. high above Earth. High above Earth.
Welcome to Earth. Yeah.
The super weapon explodes in a shower of flames and debris with seconds to spare. I'm going to be real. When it blew up, I actually felt relief. Like, I was like, wow. Because we've been just stressed out about this fucking weapon for so long, dude.
Although it was a little weird because I was like going, you guys are reusing footage? Because I could have sworn I saw Ewoks cheering when the thing exploded in the sky.
For real.
But, you know, I was like going...
You know what I thought I saw? I thought I saw the engineering section of the Enterprise D. I was like, wait a minute. That's a bad Photoshop.
Well, I swear I saw Bruce Willis in a shuttle flying away from that explosion. I mean, that, you know, it's like, bro, like, come on, guys. Let's put a little money into this.
Five? What the fuck? Act 4. Enterprise is holding position to rendezvous with Degra's ship. T'Pol notes that the long-range sensors are detecting no spheres, that all spatial anomalies within their scanning range has vanished, and that the thermobaric clouds. My tongue did a backflip. I was like, what the fuck? They detected earlier are starting to dissipate. You know what's crazy? In one episode,
what's crazy?
They stopped the Zindi from destroying Earth while also saving the Zindi.
Yeah,
I would rub that in their face like a dog who pissed on the carpet, bro. I'd be like, look at these two things I did. I beat your ass and I saved your ass. Watch your fucking tone when I come over here next. With one ship, by the way. One ship.
And then out of nowhere, Shram comes out and goes, you didn't do it alone.
Yeah, and then they do the fucking handshake from fucking Predator. Bro.
It's like their arms are like huge and shit. Oh,
that is the best handshake in all cinematic history. And why was the sound effect like a bomb went off? Bro, I was like, get the fuck out of here. While the crew
what's
tries
the matter?
To establish-
you hear Archer looking at Shram go, what's the matter? They have you pushing too many pencils.
I need to watch that movie again. I love that movie.
It's so good.
I miss the 80s. People say it's toxic now, the whole 80s hero or whatever. And I'm like, he didn't do anything mean.
like, shut up.
I didn't see him smack a bitch. He just T'Pol shares her age, which is 65, which is actually older than we thought, because we've been saying she was in her 50s for a while.
You see Tucker going, oh, well, then you might want to subscribe to Medicare. Because
Oh, we could get discounts at Denny's. Awesome. Space Denny's. Informing him that some Vulcans believe that this information is intimate. Basically, she likes him, so she told him shit that she wouldn't, you know, like, say.
Yo, we fucked, but your age is intimate? Like,
Vulcans are weird. When the ships finally meet and meet themselves, Reed tells the crew that the weapon has been destroyed. But explains that Archer was not able to beam out in time. Enterprise docks with the Zindi aquatic cruiser shortly thereafter, and T'Pol is told by the primate that they will be returning to Earth within a day. Yeah, they're hitching. I think Enterprise is fucked. So yes. The aquatics ship is big enough to hold.
Yeah,
Enterprise, which is kind of cool.
That undercarriage thing, yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's like a fucking huge space dock for them.
That shit, it's like an aircraft carrier. What the fuck? He also notes that the Zindi insectoids have been unable to ignore recent events and that the reptilians will soon also be forced to accept that the sphere builders were just using them for their own end. Finally, he tells her that Archer's sacrifice will not be forgotten and wishes them a safe journey. In sickbay, Fox mentions that the animals can sense that they are traveling within another ship and are upset by it. Fox asks T'Pol how is the crew morale holding up. T'Pol tells him that losing a captain is not easy for any crew. Fox agrees and states that they are all going to need time to heal. When T'Pol inquires about the well-being of Porthos, Archer's dog, Phlox said he will be fine in time. In an uncharacteristic gesture, T'Pol then comforts and pets Porthos, the loss of his friends. It's also a little bit of a similarity between the two, because T'Pol's been struggling with the whole emotion thing.
Yeah.
And it's just time heals all wounds kind of thing.
And that moment was actually kind of poignant for me. It was like, you hear that? You'll be fine. And I think she was saying that mostly for herself too.
Yeah. It was a really good scene. I thought that was a really good moment.
Yeah.
Also, plus she never liked the dog to T'Pol. You're always talking shit, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, she didn't like the dog.
No, I honestly can't believe she touched it. When she reached out and touched it, I went, whoa, what the fuck? Bitch won't even touch a breadstick. When the ship's near Earth, Enterprise leaves the Zindi vessel and sets a course for home. Hoshi, despite Phlox's medical objections, insists on taking her station as they head home. Earth is soon within visual range, and the entire bridge crew stares in awe at the planet that they fought so hard for and that some of their shipmates gave their lives to save. Reed states that the Enterprise – I don't know why, but because it's been a long road. You know, I was happy to see Earth too, and I'm sitting on it. You know, Reed states that the
captain – in that perfect sphere –
it's gorgeous, you know. Yeah. Reed states that the captain would have been proud of this moment, as Tucker notes that Earth is the prettiest sight he has ever seen, and more importantly, it's in one piece. However, things happen to take a strange turn when Hoshi is unable to raise Starfleet command despite everyone expecting them to be waiting anxiously for news. Scans show that all orbital platforms are missing and there are no communication with the Lunar One colony either. Despite all of their attempts, T'Pol sends Tucker and Mayweather in a shuttle pod to San Francisco to find out what is going on. And at first, everything looks fine. However, Mayweather detects three vessels approaching, but as they try to hail them, they hear metallic noises coming from the helm. Three World War III era airplanes, P-51.
World War II.
Sorry. Oh,
they would have been nuclear missiles if it was World War III.
P-51 Mustangs, to be exact, are flying toward them and firing at them. It's funny because they're firing bullet and they're just kind of sitting in the ship like, what's going on? Because it's not harming the ship.
It's like, ting, 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 ting.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in a Nazi medical camp, a Nazi officer requests to see a patient. A doctor takes the officer to the patient, a man that turns out to be Archer, badly burned. When the doctor asks if they recognize his uniform, an alien in Nazi uniform steps out of the shadows. It took me everything not to watch the next episode, dude.
I've been thinking like, oh, I could watch now. I'm like, oh, wait, but next week we got the season 3 recap.
Yeah, we gotta wait.
I gotta wait.
Or unless you're gonna watch it twice.
Well, I have been watching these episodes twice, because the first time I watched, even with Strange New Worlds, I watched the first one, and then later on, like closer to like with these, like, you know how we watched both parts, when we were doing the original episode, I ended up rewatching this one just as a refresher, and then also to kind of see if there were some things that I missed. And,
I always say I'm going to, but then I don't. And it's been even more difficult because I've started to get back into reading again. So now I'm not even fucking, you know, I'm doing other shit. But if I read more, I'm smarter than all of you. So, you know, that's how that works.
You need
I'm
Jesus
better
in your
than
life.
All of you.
You need Jesus in your life.
Right. I'm gonna read the Bible. Background information, ladies and gentlemen. This episode marked the end of both the third season of Star Trek Enterprise and the Zindi arc. It's not what it says at the top, but okay. In a special feature on the season 4 DVD, Connor Trinneer says he believes that the producers deliberately created an ending so ambiguous that had the series been canceled, the reaction to it ending that way would have been so negative as to make the network execs miserable, calling it a willy move on their part. Yeah, because at the end of season three, they were kind of talking that it might get canceled.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember being sad. Rick Berman has compared the episode to Star Trek Deep Space Nine's final chapter arc. He said it was kind of like the end of Deep Space Nine in a way. We had a lot of threads that needed to be tied up. We didn't have as many threads as we did with Deep Space Nine because we had so many characters on that show. And What You Leave Behind was also a season finale.
Series.
A series finale, sorry. but here it was a question of how to end the Zindi arc. You know, and I agree with him because I kind of thought about the Dominion Wars a little bit in some of the fights and stuff. The window behind Daniels and Jonathan Archer is the signing ceremony scene. Yeah, we know. no, I'm just kidding. It was a reuse of a port that prominently featured on the USS Enterprise J and Enterprise Azadi Prime, which was also a scene where Daniels brought Archer into the future. On purpose? No, they probably just found it in the back. This episode receives an Emmy Award nomination for Michael Westmore's outstanding prosthetic makeup for a series, miniseries, movie, or special. And I agree, because when they were like getting sick or whatever, that looked really good.
Yeah.
Continuity and trivia. This is the only Star Trek episode whose name begins with the letter Z.
Wow.
Just in case you play the trivia game, you'll be able to... This episode marks the death of Dalum, played by Scott McDonald.
This brings up Strange New Worlds. No, just kidding.
I knew it. I fucking knew it, dude. Do I know Scott McDonald? Why does that sound familiar to me?
No, I don't. It's an actor.
This episode reveals the founding members of the United Federation of Planets are humans, Vulcans, and Andorians, and Tellarites. It's humans, elves, the Tellarites are dwarfs, and I forget what the Andorians are. Tieflings? I don't know. Hobbits? Oh. I don't know.
Oh, okay. This guy has played everything, that Rollins guy. He was in TNG. He played Nevek, a Romulan. He played...
He's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he was Jem'Hadar in DS9. And another reptilian alien. He was also in the season the series premiere of Voyager Caretaker.
Nice. T'Pol finally reveals her age, 65, nearly 66, to Tucker, who initially wondered about
somebody
it.
Somebody failed there. They could have said 69.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, I'm 69. They're like, yeah.
It was a different time. about it all the way back to Carbon Creek. This episode marks the final appearance of the Sphere Builders as well as the Zindi, though a few stray reptilians pop up in a nightmare Archer has in the fourth ceiling episode of Home. This is also the first time T'Pol speaks directly to and touches Porthos. Amazing. Mm-hmm. At the end of the third season. Following the destruction of the Zindi weapon, T'Pol makes a log entry as acting captain that incorrectly identifies the date as February 14, 2152, rather than 2154. Okay, nerd.
Fucking nerds.
I know. Whether intentionally or not, the day that the Zindi weapon is destroyed over Earth is Valentine's Day, the 45th day of the year 2154.
Dude, that would have been perfect because he'd be like, we could die here today. Do you want to die a virgin? You know,
stupid. And obviously, next episode is the first episode of season four called Stormfront. Archer and his crew find themselves in Earth's past with events of World War II altered by the temporal Cold War. So we're moving right into, they don't even get leave.
Right.
You know, but this is going to be cool because it's, you know, the Nazis are the bad guys. It's always fun because nobody likes Nazis. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, some people like
Nazis. Only Nazis like Nazis. And no one likes Nazis, so it doesn't matter.
As usual, next week will be our, what do we call our, as we call in comic book terms, our one-shot.
Our season in review.
Yeah, so we'll be looking back at season three, talking about the season as a whole. And see what I did there. Our season as a whole, as well as our top five good and, well, not so good episodes. I don't want to call them bad, But this season, to kind of give a little bit, there were a lot of episodes that were decent, but there were certain elements of the show that didn't need to be there. But there are at least two
episodes.
Well, not even not even that. It was just certain, like, the episodes themselves weren't horrible. There were just certain aspects within that episode that made them kind of bad. And except for two of them, which we both kind of agree on, were just bad.
Yeah.
So, although one did, in that episode, one did have a good lining because she was wearing negligee.
Oh. I mean, it was like Starfleet issued, but still, you know, we've all seen the moments in the decontamination room. Okay. Starfleet issue was definitely designed by a man.
Yeah, I know. All the guys are dressed in like boxer briefs and like tank tops, and women have like flowy silk negligees with kind of see through. Like,
we're just thinking about comfort here, okay? Yeah, comfort's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Comfort for my eyes, baby. You feel me?
We know this episode's kind of be shitty, so let's go ahead and give them some eye candy there.
Oh, Jesus. Thanks for tuning in. You've ditched the ads and would like to stay independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows on the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to thelazygeeks.com and click on the donate button.
And if you can't help us out monetarily, we get it. But you can also share the show with your buddies and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can. This will give us bigger exposure. All of this helps. Trust me. Just let it happen.
You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks, where we discuss being a geek in an adulting world, available where you found this one.
And if you want to be a part of the show, hit us up on the comments, questions, or if you have ideas for future episodes, you can go ahead and catch us up on the social media, you know, the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram, all under at The Lazy Geeks, or email us themailbag@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. So until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Two to beam up.